We got Big Tony over here. How's it going?
It's going good. I totally spaced out in the shower.
Oh wow, we're starting raunchy. Okay.
All right. I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, I'm like deep in my thoughts, just kind of like zoning, the warm water is hitting my hair, and I'm just like, all right. And then I was like, oh shit, I'm late. So I like
I know,
but I was gonna be late. So I like you caught me like running up to the computer right before.
What were you
started,
thinking about?
I don't even remember. I just
liar.
I just zone out.
Was it? Oh, so it wasn't even like thinking about anything. It was just like meditation. Just like there was no thoughts.
I'm sure. I think there were thoughts. They were just passing through me. You know.
Got it. Okay. Nice, man. Well, that's good. I mean, listen. I'm usually the one who's late, and you weren't even late. So I love it. And your hair looks great.
Oh, stop it.
It does, dude. It looks like very, I don't know the right terms. Voluminous? Is that one that I've seen on commercials? Voluminous?
Voluminous?
Voluminous, is that? Yeah. It looks great, whatever it's supposed to look like.
It's the lighting.
You don't gel it up, do you?
No, it's just still got some water in it.
It's got some voluminous from, it's got some volume from the water. Right?
I guess so.
I don't know. I don't have hair, so I can't really be talking about that.
Well, what's going on with you, man? What's new?
Dude, everything's good. I'm trying to think about what's going on. We're living in a house now. Yeah. So we're living in a house. It's just far more relaxed. It's been great. And what do I have going on? I published the YouTube video, the sugar video, the I ate sugar every day. I spike my blood sugar every day. Well, you know what's funny? The YouTube video didn't do that well.
Really?
Yeah, it really didn't do that well, which is like really one thing that I like about doing these podcasts with you is I really try and be very openly transparent with everything that's going on with like whether it's cost of things or rather than just saying, oh my God, something did really well. It did great on Instagram while I was doing it, while I was going through the process. People were super engaged with it and really were enjoying it. But on YouTube, it really didn't. And it didn't do terribly, but it did not do anywhere near as well as I had hoped or anticipated, which it's funny. I was talking to my buddy about it last night. I'm very much at a point in my career where I'm totally fine with that, right? Like it's one of those things where I worked really hard on it. My videographer worked really hard on it for the last like month and a half. It was a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money went into it. And it didn't like dominate like expected, but there are a relatively small number of people who did get a lot from it. And that's the most important thing.
And it sounds like you learned some things too, right?
Dude, I learned so much doing that experiment. So it's one of those things where all of the knowledge gained will continue to benefit me and other people for years to come. And that I think will lead to growth of business and to improvement in so many other ways. So something like this, where if I had put so much time, effort, and money into something and it didn't do well earlier in my career, it really would have been very difficult for me. But I'm at this point, it was like, yeah, it didn't do as well as I would have hoped, but on to the next. And it's for me, a helpful mindset.
And like relative to like your video doing well, did you get like half as many views or a fraction?
No, a fraction. Yeah.
I wonder if there's been an algorithm tweak or something.
There for sure has. Yeah. There for sure has been changes in that. But I don't want to blame it on that. I think there's a lot. So I think like I took a long time off of YouTube. I took like a year and a half off of YouTube. And, you know, so that was my fault in terms of not continuing to keep up with what I was doing. But then I've been back on it for about a year now. And there's definitely been some changes. But one thing that I'm very well aware of with my own content is if you really want to do very well, generally speaking, you have to try and, especially on YouTube, an hour long video is usually not the way to go. Not always, but usually not the way to go. Usually like an 8 to 20 minute tends to be the top performers. And I'm not willing to cut out vital information just in the hopes that it will do better for me, because then you get more views, but less education.
So I have another theory as well.
Okay.
This is something that I've learned in podcasting, mostly as a listener. And that's when it comes to long form, like hour long plus content, it might hit my feed and I just don't have time to get to it.
Yep.
For a bit. So I wonder if there's going to be a longer tail on this one.
Yeah, I think so. This was made with the intent of I was talking with my wife about this. She asked why I make certain pieces of content. Not all of it, but a huge percentage, the majority of my content is made with the goal of long term. Mm-hmm. So that when I'm 40, 50, 60, 70, gone, not on this earth, people will still be finding it. And that's one of the reasons why I don't do like the whole, I don't like to do the current event style posting, because when you do like current events, that dies within a week, maybe less now with how quickly new things come out and all of that. I like to do things that will last forever for a number of reasons. I think there's a business component to it. There's also an education component to it. So yeah, I would imagine this will have like a slow burn forever, as opposed to like a huge, like massive fire right at the beginning and then it dies down. This will have a slow burn forever.
So yeah, I think we should link this episode in the show notes for this episode, since we've been talking about it. If you haven't watched this video, check it out.
Thank you. That'd be great. Thank you very much.
So I wanted to run this by you, you know, about a year ago.
Oh, wow.
You became a father.
Oh, yes. I thought you said you wanted to run it by me a year ago.
No.
You want to run it by me. A year ago, I became a father. Got it. Okay.
I've been planning this for years.
I was like, wow, man, you've really been like taking notes and preparing for this one.
Well, you did this great episode about preparing to be a father.
Mm.
And I thought it would be really cool to, 1 year in, talk about how it's been versus your expectations, talk about how it's been for your health and fitness, you know, what's changed, what hasn't, what's been difficult, what's been easier than expected, and just kind of talk about,
dude, I love it.
Father.
I completely forget what I spoke about in that initial episode. The last year has been crazy in the best way possible. So if you haven't listened to the episode in which I like was like, hey, I'm going to be a father, we'll put that in the show notes as well.
That's one of my favorites, by the way.
Yeah, that one did really well. People really enjoyed that one. But yeah, dude, I'm more than happy to talk about it. Do you want to start off with certain questions, or what do you want to do?
Yeah, so I guess when you were, and you just said you don't really remember, but if you can bring yourself back as best as possible to before you became a father. And actually, I remember one of the things that we talked about. And I asked you, I was like, so are you worried about getting enough sleep?
Mm.
And you looked at me and you were just like, not at all. Not even close. Like, it's not, like, other things might be hard, but that's not going to be an issue at all. How was your sleep?
Wow. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because, dude, that's something like I've been wrong so many times in my life. I wasn't wrong about that one. Now, to be fair, my daughter is an unbelievable sleeper. So here's what I'll say. The first 5 weeks were super hard. Mm-hmm. Like, and I would say if they were super hard on me, they were out of this world hard on my wife. Like, because, you know, breastfeeding and like my daughter literally, it's not a figure of speech, like, relied on, like, physically, physiologically relied on my wife, and it didn't matter who I was, if I was there or not, from a, like, my daughter's survival perspective. So it was way more difficult on my wife than it was on me. So the first 5 weeks were very difficult, up constantly, like
every couple hours, little sleep.
Like, at most. And it's not even then, it was difficult for me to let myself go to sleep, because worried about her dying, like her like getting suffocated in some mm-hmm. way, which is a very real thing. And there's like, I just always wanted to look at her, and I still do. Like, I just don't want to not like, it's just this most amazing thing that like, I just don't want to stop watching. I could just watch you sleep and just watch you all the time. So sleep was devastating the first 5 weeks, but I also think the mindset that I had going into it, in which I was like, it's not going to be a problem, that helped me, because I was like, I'm prepared. Like, I know this is going to be terrible. I know this is going to be awful, but it is what it is. You know, it's like our entire human history has done this since the beginning of time. So like that's what we're made to do. We're made to do this. Mm-hmm. So it was difficult, but I wasn't surprised, nor was it something that prevented me from doing what I needed to do. So the first 5 weeks were really tough. But after that, and I know a lot of people are going to ask like how, like either like super lucky, whatever. After the first 5 weeks, bro, she slept at minimum 8 hours a night, usually closer to like wow. 11 to 13 hours a night. It's just, she just loves to sleep. It's crazy. Yeah.
In that first 5 weeks, did you notice side effects from not sleeping well?
I mean, it was, you know, what's funny. I don't know if you remember, but I was also doing a mini cut at that time because I wanted to show people that you can still lose weight. Mm-hmm. And like, even when you're sleep deprived, even so, I had just started a mini cut literally like the day after she was born. And, you know, by the first 5 weeks, I had lost about 5 or 6 pounds and I was still working out. My workouts were, I don't know if you remember, I was doing workouts at like 10 p.m., 11 p.m., sometimes midnight.
Yeah, you had the schedule flipped.
Yeah, because basically I was doing like the 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. feedings so that my wife could get a little bit of sleep. And so I realized that if I was doing my workouts at the normal time, then I would be exhausted at 2 or 3 a.m. So by shifting my workouts to like a 10, 11, 12, then I was more awake, just I had more adrenaline, and people would always be like, wait, why are you doing this? Aren't you going to be, is it going to be harder to go to sleep? That was the point. I wanted it to be harder to go to sleep so that I could be up to feed my daughter without being exhausted. In terms of side effects, it was, there's so much going on in those first five. It's great. Like there's
is.
So much. It's, yeah, I don't know. You can hear in the background. there's so much happening, and not to mention, I also like, I own a business and the business has like, it's me, like I'm the guy, and I have several people who work with me, whether it's my assistant Kat, my amazing co-coach Susan. I have a couple other people who do small things like you help me as well, but like, I don't get time off work, right? Like I there is no like, hey, you get, what is it, maternity? Is it paternity leave for dad? I don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get leave. Like, I'm still working. So I was also having to make content, making stuff for the Inner Circle, publishing that, doing, like, I was still working and doing all this. So there's just so much craziness nonstop that realistically, I don't know if this is just how my brain works or what, but it was so crazy and so difficult. But I didn't spend time thinking about like, oh my God, this is so hard. I just got to a point where I was like, this is just, it is what it is. And I've just got to do it. And it was really hard, but I mm-hmm. didn't spend that much time thinking about it other than like, all right, I'm going to do a mini cut and I'm going to lose weight. And I'm going to show people that I can do this. And I'm going to feed my daughter at 2 a.m. and I'm going to like do whatever I can for my wife and all of that. I will say the one thing that we invested in that was, to this day, my wife still says it's the best investment we ever made, was we got a night nurse 2 to 3 nights per week.
Okay.
Which I didn't even know it was a thing, mm-hmm. but our friends did it as well. And they spoke so highly of this woman that we got her as well. So for 2 to 3 nights a week, we would have a woman come to the apartment and she would stay the night. And before she started working with us, she asked us what our goals were. And I remember just telling her, I was like, I don't know how to keep a baby alive. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. And there's no, I don't know. It's not like you go to the hospital, you have a baby, and then it's like, here, go take the baby home and keep it alive. And I was like, I just want to learn how to do it. And I want to learn how to do it in a way that is comfortable for the baby and make sure that the baby is like on a good schedule and all that. And so she helped us figure that out. And I think that's why my daughter became such a good sleeper, is because she was on a very regimented schedule from the beginning. And it helped us, because now instead of just being at the whim of she's up, she's mm-hmm. she's not up, she's this, she's that, we had real direction in being like, this is what you do, this is where you go. And so having that schedule and that routine and the this is the response you have to this sort of helped me compartmentalize. So it wasn't as difficult. It would have been exponentially more difficult if we didn't have that training. Mm-hmm. So that was by far, I think, the best investment, and helped me stay organized and maintain some level of a schedule and organizational process throughout that very difficult time.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know this is very different, but I wonder if some of this applies here. When I get incredibly busy, I also become more efficient and more productive.
Yep. What's that law? There's a law where it's like, however much time you have, that's how much time it's going to take.
It only takes 10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking? There's a law, right?
I don't know what it's called, but I've heard that saying. And yeah, no, I mean, the pressure does guide you to be more efficient, right?
I'm looking this up. Parkinson's law is the old adage that work expands to fill the time allotted for its completion. Yeah, that's exactly right. Where that's why it's always a joke when people are like, yeah, when I'm less busy, I'll do this. It's like, no, if you have like so much free time, then you're going to take however much time you have in order to get the thing done. But if like, hey, you've only got 45 minutes, mm-hmm. you'll get that thing done in 45 minutes. It's like, that's just how it works every time.
Yeah, whether it's that little workout or, you know, sending those emails or whatever it is. You know, I do wonder for yourself and for myself too, if we're always on because we're our own boss.
Mm-hmm.
If you have your own, let me phrase it a different way. If we're always on because we have our own business, you know, if you say, if you have this much time, the work will expand to fill this much time. If you never say I'm off, do you think that that's why you're always working?
That's really good. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it in that way. And I just want to pause and say, I love how you deliberately thought about what you said, how we're our own boss, and you changed it to we have our own business.
Yeah.
I'm a words guy. I just love that you backtracked. You're like, hold on, let me phrase that a different way. I love that.
It wasn't right.
And regardless of whether agree or disagree with the words that you said, and we could talk about that if you want, but I love you said it. The words came out of your mouth. They went, that you heard yourself say them and you said, hold on, let me rephrase that. That behavior is very undervalued and overlooked in conversation and in objective awareness of how we speak. So I just love that you did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, from the moment I wake up on like phone, for a lot of people, for example, going to Instagram is they're procrastinating. They're not really working. I can't go on Instagram and not work. It's like, as soon as I'm on, it's not a relaxing thing for me. It's not like I'm just going to take some time away from work. When I go on Instagram, I've got messages, I've got comments, and it's everything relates to my work. I think it was in 2019 or 2020 where I started getting berated for people seeing stuff that I liked, and people would be like, I can't believe you liked this. Like, I don't know if I should support you anymore, where it's like, now I can't even physically like certain content. And I have other friends who have somewhat large audiences, and it's funny because they'll see that I'll like something and they'll message me and they'll be like, damn, you're brave. And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, I saw that you like this, and I know that it's like a controversial thing to like. So going on Instagram is not relaxing for me. It's work. And you're always being aware of what people are seeing. Are they messaging you? Are they commenting you? Are they sharing something? So, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed, it's always on. And I think any business owner understands that. But I think now with business being in our pocket on our phone, it becomes far more available. Even if you had a brick and mortar business long before the internet, yet you were still always on, but you could get away from it. You could get away a little bit and you were always thinking about it, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like you could make direct changes to it from your home in your palm. So there definitely is, it's a constant on. And I have lately, what I've been doing is I've been before, like when I would work out during my rest periods, or even if I was doing some low intensity cardio, I'd be on Instagram answering DMs. And sometimes I do, but lately, especially since we moved to the house, it's been so much more relaxing in the house and working out in the garage. I've been listening to podcasts, which I never really used to do. Nice. And so I've actually been listening to, there's an amazing, it's a Judaism like podcast about the Torah. And I've been wanting to dive more into that. And so just, there are these like hour long episodes. The podcast I'm listening to starts back in 2016. So I just started all the way back at the beginning and I'm working my way up. And it's actually been great for me mentally and emotionally, because I get to just have an hour of uninterrupted and not like constant new types of information, not scrolling, which I just think is rotting your brain away. Yep. And I can listen and study and learn and you know, contemplate life and God and all of this while I'm going through. So yeah, it's, when you own a business, you're always on. That is for sure.
Outside of the podcasting while you work out, have you noticed any changes to your work-life balance since you became a father?
You know, I think going back to Parkinson's law, I've gotten much better at, oh, this needs to get done. Let's just get it done. As opposed to before, it would have been easier for me to procrastinate, for me to elongate the time needed to do something. The reason is mainly because I have immense guilt and FOMO when I'm not with my daughter. Like for even doing this podcast, she slept in a little bit later today. So because we're doing this, I didn't get to wake her up, which I hate. Like I love going
now
in to
I feel
wake.
Bad.
No, it, dude, like this is what we do, right? Yeah. And like most people who work, like there's at least one person in the family that's like not going to get to do those things on a consistent basis. So it's also one of the things where if you do it every day, you can start to take it for granted. So during the weekends, it's like, it's the best ever because I can really savor the moment. But usually I get to wake her up. Not all the time do I get to put her to sleep. It depends on the day.
And so do you schedule weekends kind of off for work?
Yeah. So
relatively, since given the context?
Relatively. I still work. I still do work. But I've been doing my best, especially, you know, diving more into Judaism and really trying to learn more about that. Saturday is Shabbat. Mm-hmm. So, and you're not supposed to do anything. It's like, that's just family. That's just family day. Like no work, no nothing. And I'm not on that level yet where mm-hmm. it's like full, they call it Shomer Shabbat, where it's like, you just don't like no electronics, no driving. No, it's like, you're with your family. You can sit, you can talk, you can read, but it's just only family day. So, I'm not on that level, but I really do try, and I would not like, I will not miss waking her up. I'll not miss putting her into bed. We'll do family walks. I'll read to her. So it's like full days of her, which is great. But in terms of work-life balance, I think I probably work about the same amount of time, and it's more like when I'm not working before I had her, when I wasn't working, I could do whatever,
right?
You know, whether it's right. like take a phone call with a buddy or, you know, just doing literally whatever I want. Mm-hmm. I could take a nap. I could go on and respond to DMs, which is technically working, but like I could brainstorm whatever, like I could do whatever I want, go out to eat, grab a drink. Da-da. Now it's like, I'm either working or I'm with my daughter, and that's it. And I love it. Dude, I love it. And it's funny because I'll never forget early on, probably within the first 2 or 3 months of having her, I had a couple, not many, this is not many DMs. I had a couple of DMs from people basically saying, I don't like how you're sharing all of this stuff because not everyone really enjoys the time like with their kid. Like not everyone has an amazing experience with having kids. And I was like, I understand that, but I am having an amazing experience with it. So I'm not gonna fucking lie about it. It's like, I understand there are many difficult situations and everyone's affected differently once they have a child. But for me, it has been what Tony, when I say it's like the best thing that has ever happened to me, it is there's nothing that supersedes that or comes anywhere close. It is the most joy, the most fun, the most happiness, the most fulfillment I've ever had. I've experienced emotions that I didn't know existed. It's just like there is literally nothing better. And then it's gotten better over time. Now, like I can come in and so she calls my wife Ima for mom in Hebrew and me Abba. Like there's literally nothing better than when I walk in the room and she goes, bah. Mm-hmm. And she looks at me and she smiles and says, bah. And then like she'll crawl over to me and like pick her arms up so that I can pick her. Like there's nothing better in the world than that. So like it's the best. It's like the greatest thing ever to happen in the history of ever.
Were you expecting it to be like this in terms of just being as joyous and as expansive as you're describing it?
You know, it's funny. I always knew I wanted kids. Mm-hmm. I always knew I wanted kids. But when I thought about having kids, I never thought about it in like this baby stage. I always thought my like brain projected into watching them accomplish something, seeing them overcome difficult challenges as like, you know, young kids, maybe, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 or mm-hmm. teenagers. Mm-hmm. I never thought about the baby stage. Really, the only image I had of baby stage was babies crying on planes. that was it. And to understand my personal context, I've taken hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of flights. Like from 2016 to 2019, I was on planes more than I was anywhere else. And I remember I had one flight to Turkey where the baby in the seat behind me was shrieking the entire flight. And I felt so bad for the baby, but that's just like what my brain conjured up whenever I thought of like the baby stage.
Yeah.
So I didn't expect it to be this joyous at this point. I knew like it would be great, but I didn't know it would be this great. I didn't know like, and to be, again, it's very difficult. There's many difficult aspects to it, but it's just the most amazing thing. And I didn't know it would be this great to hear her say Abba or to watch my wife become a mother and to watch her interact with her. And it's funny, like I had thought of as a young kid, 6, 7, 8 or a teenager overcoming things, overcoming obstacles. I get to see the same thing with my infant daughter who's overcoming obstacles and who's learning things and having huge accomplishments. It's just the developmental process is much earlier on. So like watching her like stand up and then try and take a step and fall and smack her butt on the ground. And then she'll look up at me and we've become very good. Like we never are like, oh my God, are you okay? Like we immediately say, you're okay, you're good.
Lead
and like she'll smile.
Yeah,
very positive. And then watching her just be totally fine with it and move on. And like, it's, I didn't expect to see so much overcoming. Like being a baby is just, it's constantly overcoming, overcoming obstacle minute after minute after minute after minute, struggling to communicate, struggling to figure out what, like to try and say what you need, learning how to turn pages in a book, learning all these new skills. Watch, like, dude, she's watching. It's crazy. Did I tell you that what she does with the TV remote?
Mm-mm.
This is, I had a real mind fuck moment when I was like, oh my God, she's already watching. Like she's like taking in what we're doing. And this happened, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, maybe even like 5 months ago. So when she was like, probably like 7 or 8 months old, she picked up the TV remote and just pointed it at the TV. Like you do when you hit the button to turn it on. She picked up the remote. She can't say a word yet. She picks up the remote and she points at the TV expecting it to go on. And I was like, that's wild. I was like, that's...
She gets it.
She gets it. And then it's just like exponentially increased from there, where that immediately, reality check, I need to watch my behavior. Mm-hmm. I need to watch what I'm doing, because she is clearly seeing what we're doing. Like, yeah. If she's there's no reason for her, and she does this all the time now. As soon as she wants to watch TV, she picks up the remote and points it. It's crazy. It's the most wild thing. So even before she was one, she was doing that. So that for me was a huge change of like, oh my gosh, like I need to get my shit together.
Can you think of an example of something that you want to watch out for in what you're doing in front of her? Is there something in particular that comes to mind?
I think one of the big ones is, growing up, we had a lot of soda in my house. My house was not health conscious at all, And it's not a negative thing towards my family or my mom. It was just like they weren't educated in it and their priorities were elsewhere. And so just a lot of soda in the house. That's like what we drank more than anything, was soda.
Yeah.
And so I think that really screwed with my idea of like, I struggled for a long time with just, and I'm holding up my water bottle, I struggled with just having plain water. It's one of the reasons why I think I really like seltzer and and like sparkling water, because I just prefer it. And I think a lot of it has to do with me having carbonated drinks earlier when I was a kid. And I wish that I could enjoy plain water like I'm drinking right now. I wish it could just be more enjoyable, as opposed to always craving the sweetness of like a diet soda or even a sparkling water. So I'm going to be very deliberate with my words here. You're welcome to have diet soda. Diet soda is fine. I don't think you should have like 7 a day, but having one a day or whatever it is, like here and there, it's not a bad thing. But I noticed that I don't want her to see me drinking Diet Coke as my main drink. Mm. And if I'm having it even just once a day, that's enough of an exposure, because I don't watch TV very much. I watch TV a couple times a week and she already knows how to use the remote. And so I was like, all right, so now we don't have Diet Coke in the house. We don't buy it. I had a conversation with my wife and she agreed. When we go out, we can have it. If we want to have it at a restaurant, if we want to have it like when we're out, but in the house, it's water or milk or protein shake, whatever it is. And that is probably the biggest thing where, and again, it's not bad. It's not like shaming. It's just, what does she see as normal? And if that's something that she's seeing every day, I know what I wish I had looking back on my life. And I wish that wasn't like the main drink that we had as kids, because I think that did desensitize me to sweetness. Mm-hmm. And so I would rather have water be the norm and Diet Coke or a diet beverage be the treat. Be like the rarity type thing, or the more moderation. So that was probably the most recent one that was very big.
Yeah. This is less a question and more it just occurs to me. It's like, you came from a home where fitness wasn't the priority, where diet wasn't the priority. And she's going to come from a home where you guys are eating really well, where you're working out consistently, where you're not having, you know, soda in the house. Like, that's going to be so cool for her, you know?
I hope so. I mean, I also understand there will probably be, that will present its own set of issues, right? Mm. Where it's like, no matter what, there's always going to be some issues, no matter what. One thing we have started, another behavior we've started doing is, because the garage is just, that's the gym now, we deliberately bring her out when we work out, just to be outside, which is great. That's one of the reasons we wanted to move, is so we could just get outside more easily.
So it's like open to the yard or something, or
it opens
garage
up right outside, and yeah, she can go in the grass, and we put on a little like tricycle, and we go on walks every day and all that. But we deliberately bring her out while we exercise, so that she can see that we do that, and so that she can get comfortable in a gym. And so I think that's going to be one of the greatest benefits of growing up in our house, is exercise will not be seen as a punishment. Exercise will not be foreign to her. She will not be uncomfortable in a gym. She will be very confident with herself and what she can do. Just normalizing it and not using it as a, oh, I ate a lot, I need to go burn it off. Using it as a, this makes me feel better. And this is just what we do. So I think that is going to be a huge benefit. But also, you know, no matter what, I think that parents are doomed because they're always going to have some level of, no matter how great you are, there's always going to be something that you do is wrong, right? Like that you can't be right in every, you can't be perfect in every way. I'm going to do something wrong that will sit with my daughter forever. I will. I know it. I pray that I don't. And I pray that it's not devastating, but like no one's perfect, including parents. And so I would imagine that there will be something. I think it's going to be something related to school. If I like have a prediction.
Yeah. Talk about that.
So I have a huge bias against school because of what I went through as a special education student. And I have a whole episode on that. We can put that in the show notes, but I have a huge bias against the education system. I have a huge bias against because of how I was treated. And because I think so many kids, especially kids who were like me, who didn't fit the traditional mold, were set aside and seen as stupid. And I've just seen so many of the kids who were not fit in that traditional box succeed, like overwhelmingly high levels of success. And that's where I start to be like, well, fuck school. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm also not good at it. Like, dude, I'm so bad at math. I can't even begin to tell you. And so I'm petrified for the day very early on in her life when she realizes at like 8 that she's better at math than I am. Like she's going to come home with some, I don't know if they do long division anymore. I don't know. But I remember trying to do long division or fractions. Are you kidding me? Fractions? Dude, terrible. It doesn't compute in my brain. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what's going to happen. But there's definitely, like, I would imagine there will be something with that that either she's disappointed or embarrassed of me in some way. Like my dad doesn't even know how to do that math. I'm sure there's going to be something like that. But my biggest struggle from an academic perspective is going to be not downplaying the importance of school. And I think there are many ways to encourage academia and learning without needing to fit into the traditional school model. There are many ways to learn, many, many ways outside of just going to school. And that's what I think I'm going to focus on. But I'm also like, dude, I'm not going to care about her grades. I just am not. I don't care. I care about, is she treating other kids in the class well? Is she trying hard? Is she being a, like, if there's a group project, is she being a good contributor? Is she being a good leader, but also allowing other people to take the chance to lead? Is she being creative in her thought? Is she being respectful? I don't give a shit about grades. I think one of the difficulties I had growing up is grades were all that mattered.
Right.
And I just couldn't live up to it no matter what.
Yeah. It's, you ever heard the phrase, a general that's fighting the last war?
No.
So the idea is, you know, it's like it's World War II and the guy in charge is still trying to fight like it's World War I. I wonder if we're doomed to like fight the battle that we had with our parents, you know?
Dude, I love that. I haven't heard that phrase. I love that phrase. I think that's exactly right. It's got to be what parenting is, because you're battling your own demons, what your insecurities, things that you grew up with, and you swear that you're not going to be like your parents, and then who knows, maybe you are like your parents. Who knows? It's a mess. Life is a whirlwind.
What's been the biggest surprise of this first year?
The biggest surprise, you know, I think. And I think I'm probably getting a lot of hate for this, but I think the biggest surprise before we had our daughter, I just got so many people basically saying like, oh, you're in for it. it's going to completely mm-hmm. destroy you. It's going to be that, like, and I want to be very clear with how I say this. When they're saying it's terrible, but they mean like it wrecks your schedule. It wrecks everything about what you do. And it really hasn't.
Yeah.
Like at all. Yeah. It's the one change that we've had to make now is now we're traveling far less. And we moved out of the city so that we could just, you know, enjoy our time home more. So we're not going out to dinners as much, and we're not traveling as much. Like this year, actually, for many years, as long as I've been dating my wife or with my wife, we've always gone to Atlanta to see her, go to her family on Thanksgiving. This year, we're just going to do it here at our house because traveling with her is now getting to be very difficult. Like she wants to move all the time, and those mm-hmm. are long, difficult days. So it's not that it's easy, but it really hasn't been that devastating to my schedule. The first 5 weeks were really hard, and watch, God's going to laugh because God willing, if we have a second child, like people always say, like the people call the baby that we have now a sucker baby because she's so good that she suckers you into having a second one. And then second one is like, I was the second one and I was a mess. And so who knows, maybe the next one will be way worse. But like so far, the biggest surprise has been everything that I was told about how difficult it was going to be and how everything was going to change and not really the most positive ways. It could not be further from the truth. It's like everything has changed, or not every, a lot of things have changed, but everything that's changed has been for the better. And a lot of things haven't changed. I still work. My wife and I, we have date night once a week. We have a sitter come in and we do date night once a week now, which we just started in the last couple months. We didn't start that until like she was like 11 months or so, but all of the changes have been like the most amazing things. I think I've got my mom in me. Like my mom says every day, if she could go back and do it all over again, she would in an instant. Like she would do it immediately. She loved every moment of being a mom. My aunt says absolutely not. She's like, fuck that. There's no way I would go back. And she had three kids and she was like, there's no way I'm going to go back. I would never do that again. That was really difficult. Yeah. My mom, she's like, no matter how difficult it was, no matter all the struggles, like I would go back from day one and do it all over again because it was the most amazing thing in my life. And I think I have that in me. It's just like, it is the most amazing thing I've ever experienced. And I really pray that I can have more children and continue doing this because it's the best.
I remember recently you made a post and it was something like along the lines of, this isn't the strongest I've been. This isn't the fittest I've been. This isn't the most like ambitious I've been, but this is the happiest I've been.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, maybe you're schedule or your the things you're doing haven't shifted all that much, but the way that you prioritize them in your mind may have shifted just enough to take the pressure off of, hey, like if I don't get to this thing today, or hey, if I'm not pushing myself as hard in the gym or at jiu-jitsu or whatever it is. I'm curious, does that ring true? Or
dude, 100%. It's funny. I was just talking with my wife about this. I'm reducing how much I do jiu-jitsu so that I can be here more. And before my daughter, jiu-jitsu was like, no, like it's all I thought about. It's all I cared about. And I love it, but I'm not as obsessed with it as I was. Like I'm obsessed with watching my daughter. I'm obsessed with how much I love her. And if less jiu-jitsu and more time with my daughter means that I don't progress as quickly in jiu-jitsu and maybe I get smashed a little bit more or whatever it is, like that is so worth it. I can't even begin to tell you. If I make less money because I'm not as present on social media, but I get to spend more time with my daughter, I get to go on more family walks and get to like watch her eat meatballs, which is like the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like just her face is just covered and she's got sauce all over her face. And like, I go and give her a kiss on the cheek and I get the sauce on my face and she just smells like a meatball. It's just like, that's the greatest thing ever. It's so worth it. So yeah, the priorities have become a very in my face reality of like, there's just nothing more important. It's like God, family. And then my number one, like from a business perspective, it's always, I want to help as many people as I possibly can. And it's what I've said since I started my business at 21, and what I'll say until like forever. Mm-hmm. But business is not number one, where it was for a huge portion of my life. Like business was number one. Now it's like, it's important. It's a top five, but the space between, so we've got like God and family as like right there, but then the space between those two and every, and the other top things is huge.
Yeah.
Like there's, business can be a top five. We'll say business is top three, even if like, just like for example's sake, it might not be, but let's just say it's God and family is like top two. Business, it's a distant third. Like it's a far, far, far away from any of those, which 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, no way. It would have been like, it was, things were switched.
Yeah.
Things were very, where business was always number one.
Is there, you mentioned like, you know, if you're not on social media as much, that affects your bottom line. Is it that tight of a correlation? Like if take your foot off the gas for a week, do you notice a change in business?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, actually. Yeah, it is. Which is one of the things that like, I really want to, like one of my goals is changing that. It's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about doing the podcast, because I really think the podcast is the opportunity. People get so much more from an hour with me. Like people might take a whole week to listen to this episode. Some people might listen to it in one cardio session, which would be great. And I love that. And I appreciate it. But being on social media, like that's, and I'm not even on it as much as other people with large audiences. My wife follows some people who like every day their stories are like tick, 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 tick. Mm-hmm. They have like 50 and they're like, they're called these family vloggers, which I'm not sure if I really enjoy. Where
I've never heard of this.
Dude, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I think women tend to follow it more than men do, but it's they're putting their family on social media, like, and it's like it's showing everything. And I'm not fully comfortable with it in terms of sometimes the level in which they put that their children and their family on social, like we try and keep my family private and never do anything that they don't feel comfortable with. But do they like, it's, they show everything. Like, and I'm like, there's just no level of privacy here. It's just, everything is out in the open, which I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. So if I'm away from social media for like a week, I definitely notice it, but it's not even just that week though. What happens if you're away is you're rewarded for being on more. And I was actually just listening to a really great podcast episode on this about basically the reward system that is used for the slot machines and gambling that are very addictive. That's how social media is.
Yikes.
It's crazy. But if you're rewarded for being on more, the algorithm and the companies will reward you for that. If I take a week off, I'm penalized for it. And my stuff will not show up as much. And I have to work really hard to get back in like the good grace of the Instagram gods or whatever it is. You're disincentivized from ever taking time off because you know, if you start taking time off, it's not going to do as well, which is where it sort of just leads into this like constant rat race of need to do more, need to do more, need to do more. And I'm glad I worked so hard early on in my career because I think I built a foundation of if I want to stop, I can stop and it's okay. But I'm not at a point yet where I can just fully not give a shit. Like I still give a shit. I still like really can't, I can't pull away for a week and not care. Like I'm still on there. Oh, maybe another 5 to 10 years, I'll really just be able to be like, whatever. And just like only post a random odd picture here and there. But that's what, one of the reasons why I love the podcast. I can go so much more in depth here. I can go into so much more nuance. I think it's so much more meaningful what we do here than Instagram. Instagram is like these quick clips and they're helpful. They can be helpful and they can be meaningful, but these long conversations where we, like, I'm a words guy. Like I said, yeah. I love talking and I love diving deep into emotions and behavior. And that's what we can do here. It's so different than an Instagram format.
Yeah, totally. Man, that's got to keep your foot on the gas. That's life, yeah, in a lot of ways. What is something that you would like to improve upon as a father?
That's a good question. What's something? Yeah, it's interesting just because she's still so young and like we can't really, there's not active communication from the perspective of like we're not talking really. She's starting to say words, but there's not like real verbal communication.
You're not getting nuanced feedback on your fatherhood from her.
Yeah. So I think one thing that I would like to improve upon is I think I'm very good at being present in the moment. I think I like very, very good. And I've worked on that since I was a teenager. I remember reading a book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle when I was like 16 years old. And I've always been like very trying to be focused on the present moment, which has been great. I think with her, I worry. It's just, I worry so much, dude. And I didn't realize this. I'm a worrier. My buddy, Mike Vacanta, I have a whole podcast with him about how to become a personal trainer. We could put a link to that in the show notes if anyone wants to be a personal trainer. I have a podcast we publish every week on that podcast as well. I always thought like the image I have of myself in my head has always been like very happy-go-lucky, very, I don't really care. But I'm a worrier. And so I just constantly worry like, well, what's going to happen? Like, it's not worry about small things. It's not worry about like, oh my God, what she's going to wear in terms of as like, a, like, I don't care if she's wearing the blue pants or the green pants today. I don't care. I don't worry about that stuff or worry about what other people think. That's something I don't give a shit about that. I worry about like death and illness and that might be something I scar her with, which I really need to try not to, where like any little thing where like, even for example, she's a great sleeper. In my head, I'm like, she's sick. Like she's sleeping so much. Yeah. Like she sleeps so much. Like maybe she's sick. Let's call the doctor. And I'm sure experienced parents are laughing. Like, and they always do it. Like they'll wait until, which is obnoxious as shit, but they'll be like, wait until you have the second one or wait until this happens or whatever it is. But, and they say like, when you have the second one, the third one, you won't care. It's like, you don't know me. I will. And then I'll just have two or three or four to worry about this much. That's my person. I will worry about all of them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to worry about grades, but I will worry about safety at school. That one's fucking scary. That one's got me questioning my whole life, dude. That's got me questioning my whole life. Like part of me, like, do I just homeschool? But then like, I don't know if that's the right thing. I can't shelter them forever. Yeah. You know, and like, that one's fucking, I worry about that. So doing my best to not worry is probably the number one thing I can improve upon. And I think I do a good job of not putting it on her yet, but I also really can't because I'm not saying like, I'm really worried about this to you right now, but it's like, I feel it. And I know for a fact, if I'm feeling it, then in some, like, you know, when you know someone, you have the sixth sense, like you can tell, I can tell you're not feeling good. I can tell you're thinking about something. I don't want her to know if I'm like worrying about that stuff. So that's something I've really got to, I need to go to therapy and talk about that. Cause I'm fucking worried about that all the time.
Yeah. I saw you had a post and it was about not endorphins, but something that happens, the hope particle or something like that. When you work out, it actually helps with anxiety. And I found that super fascinating. Do you have anything more about that than was in the post? Or
so what did you hear? What do you remember?
Was okay. I'm pretty sure this was you. And tell me if I was wrong. But it was basically something along the lines of, you know, when you exercise, it releases some chemical in your brain that actively blocks depression, anxiety, and it's something called like the hope molecule.
Yeah,
I'm fuzzy on this, so I apologize if I'm mis- Dude, speaking.
You're right. But,
okay.
I have spoken about it. I was interested to see like how much you retain. You're correct. And it's specifically with strength training, which is like one of the really unique things about it. It's your muscles actually. It's released from muscles from strength training. It's not something you get from.
So cardio won't do that.
Well, cardio can absolutely improve your mood and reduce stress, but for different reasons, mm-hmm. like an endorphin increase. Like, dude, I feel better mentally and emotionally after doing cardio than I do from strength training. Yeah. But I think that I come from a different place in that I've done so many years of strength training that I already have a huge foundation of lean muscle and already built up. So it's like, maybe I get more benefits at this point, but earlier in my life, strength training saved my life in many ways. Mm-hmm. Strength training. And so there, I think it's both. They're both important, but yeah, there is if you Google it, there's actually a fair amount of new research that's come out in recent, probably last 5-7 years around this hope molecule. It's very cool that can help fight depression, that can help improve your mood. I think there are so many reasons for it though. If we think about it, I mean, I've told this story a number of times where I remember I was working with someone, it was her first day in the gym and she was really nervous and she didn't think she was going to be able to lift a lot of weight. And I told her by the end of the day, she was going to lift 100 pounds. And she was like, absolutely not. And at the end of the day, like I didn't show her the weight of what she was lifting. I was teaching her how to kettlebell deadlift. And I just had a 100-pound kettlebell and I had her lift it. And afterwards I told her she lifted 100 pounds and she cried. She like couldn't believe it. And it's not because the hope molecule was released in that moment. That was like a deep emotional response, overcoming fears and insecurities. And so strength, that's one of the most amazing things about strength training that I think it has over cardio is, and again, I'm not hating on cardio. I love cardio,
yeah.
But there's something about strength training that when you get stronger, it's empowering and it's mm-hmm. exciting and it's exhilarating. And if I'm practically looking at the difference between strength and cardio, generally, strength can be accomplished in a matter of seconds. Cardio is not completed in a matter of seconds, especially if it's a longer duration, lower intent. Like it could be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is. So there's something about this short duration, maximal intensity effort in which you can see how much you lifted, you can see how much you've improved, you can see how literally how much stronger you've gotten. That's just like, yeah. If that's not the definition of hope, you believe in yourself now. Like there's hope for you now. You've gotten stronger, you've improved, you've seen it. It's and yes, there's also actual molecules that are released by your muscles when this happens, but I think what'll happen is the more you do it and the more muscle you build over time, the more I think it probably becomes your normal, as opposed to earlier on, you're just flooded with this emotion and this excitement and this gratitude and this hope for what's to come because yeah. you're getting stronger. So yeah, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. My personal experience with that was similar in that when you see those tangible gains, that progress, I worked hard and now I can lift more than I used to be able to lift. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start applying it to other things in life. Well, it's like, well, if I could do that, if I work really hard at this other thing,
yes,
you know, the goalpost might be less tangible. It might not be as simple as more weight on in the bar, but
mm-hmm.
it's super empowering.
That's I think why I have a huge bias against school, but that's one of the great things about strength training as compared to like a test in school, right? Henry Rollins in The Iron famously said 200 pounds is always 200 pounds. And so The Iron never lies. There's no subjectivity here. It's you either lift it or you don't. And if you've been putting in the work and you've been training hard and you've been eating right and sleeping right, then you're going to be able to lift it and you're going to be able to lift more. If you've been lazy and you haven't been consistent and you're not sleeping well, you're not eating well, and you come back after a 3-month layoff, it's like you might not be able to lift it. And The Iron isn't lying. And that is so empowering to know. It's like The Iron isn't lying. It's telling the story of you. Whereas if, for example, I know a lot of people would like base their, a lot of kids, I remember when I was younger, they based their entire self-worth on the grades that they got, their grade point average, all that stuff. And 200 pounds is always 200 pounds, but a test is not always the same test. And the teacher is not always the same teacher. And maybe one day you're in their good graces, but the next day you're not in their good graces. And maybe they have a reason for giving you a worse grade than they should. A test is not always a test. And it's not just the test. It's not just the material. Whereas the iron, it's always the iron. 200 pounds is always 200 pounds. And it's very rare in life that you just have this one thing that is constant that you can go back to and know it's always telling you the truth, because it can't be anything but the truth. That is what it is. It is what it is, what it is, what it is. Whereas so many other things in life, it's situation dependent. It's person dependent. It's how are they feeling at the time? We can even look at, dude, there's so much amazing research around if you're going to court and you're going to be the judge is trying to decide what to sentence you, that the people who are unlucky enough to have their hearing right before lunch are far more likely to get a worse sentence than someone who has their hearing earlier in the day. Same thing with people who have their hearing right before the end of the day versus right after lunch. So the behavior of that, it's the same judge. It's the same person doing the sentencing, but maybe they're a little bit hungrier. They're a little bit more annoyed. They just want to get out and go to lunch. It's like, you're fucked based on time of day. It's the same judge. And who knows, maybe they're dealing with something in their own life. Maybe like they're having an issue, and maybe whatever it is like has sparked something to come up in their mind and their body around what's going on in this hearing. And they're a little bit biased. Who knows?
Yeah.
200 pounds is always 200 pounds. You can't fucking argue that. And that's where it's like, It's so nice to have that one thing that you can always come back to and hold yourself to that same standard every single day.
So I was going to say, you know, the next time that you're worrying about something, you know, just go load up the bar and deadlift.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, why not?
It's been really cool from my vantage point to see just you're glowing whenever you talk about your daughter and your family, and it's just infectious. And so I'm super happy for you, and to kind of witness it from afar has been really joyous as well. So
thank you
so much for sharing all of this with all of us. It's pretty incredible.
I appreciate that, man. I love you. Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone listening. I appreciate it more than I can begin to express. I know I ask every time, but if you have not left a review yet, it would mean the world to me. Please leave a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you're listening. The written reviews really help the most. Give Tony a follow. We'll put Tony's handle, Instagram handle, in the description. Please give him a follow. Shoot him a message. Let him know. Every time you shoot him a message, he's screenshotting it and sending it to me to make sure I see it. So please do that. If you want us to discuss anything in particular, let Tony know. And have a wonderful day. Talk to you soon.